If Reality Check Radio enriches your day and life, support us to keep bringing you the content, voices, perspectives, and the dose of reality you won't get anywhere else. Visit www.realitycheck.radio/donate.
Welcome back to RCR Greenwashed with Don and Jaspreet. And as we're prone to do quite often, we bring back guests that we've had in the past. And today is no exception. And we've got Bryce McKenzie from Groundswell. Welcome, Bryce. Welcome back to RCR. We've had a month off, so we're hot to trot. How about you?
Yeah, thank you, Don and Jaspreet. Yeah, it's good to be back. And after meeting the girls, Claire and Ali, and Wellington this last couple of days, it's a pleasure to be on Reality Check Radio again and see you up and going. Well done.
That's fantastic. We're looking forward to the next 12 months of full noise. And look, you've been full noise. You've taken the gumboots off and you've been to Wellington this week, a week gone by, and met with some highfalutin politicians. How did that go?
Whether I've taken the gumboots off or not, Don, my sons would probably say I really very rarely put them on now. So I think I'm probably more of a shoe wearer. But yes, we did. We've been to Wellington, and I would think we would say that we were very, very encouraged going there, Don. So we got through a lot of meetings. Would you like me to start at the start? Because that was Federated Farmers. Right. So I can give you a quick rundown, and then if you've got any questions around that, I can answer them at the finish. But on the Wednesday night, we went to met up with the chairman and some of the senior staffers at Federated Farmers, plus Vice Chairman Colin Hurst, and goodness me, I'm terrible. I've forgotten who the other one was, but there was somebody else too, and they were on Zoom. We had a wonderful discussion, Don. It'll be reasonably close to your heart because we've all watched Federated Farmers slowly back off from contentious issues in the last 10, 15, 20 years, perhaps. I don't know how long it's been, but it was great to see them wanting to stand up and really starting to understand the frustrations they've had around the so-called Team Ag. There's definitely some parts of that team that haven't been doing their bit, and probably even worse than that, they've probably been undermining other organisations, so particularly Federated Farmers. But boy, they've come out firing now. We were really encouraged by them. They could see a place for everybody that's part of ag. They certainly haven't shut the door on anybody, and we had some good discussions around that and how things can operate going forward. So that gave us a really good start to the week. Of course, we have a good relationship with Southland Federated Farmers, and they had asked if we could take a couple of things to ministers while we were up there, which we did. So 8 o'clock on Thursday morning started with 17 politicians and a whole lot of reporters and secretaries in one room presenting to Jaspreet. You'll be used to these presentations.
Boy, am I ever, Bryce.
So we sat around the table. There was six of us went. There was myself, Laurie, Jane Smith, who plays an integral part in SNA's. Oh, she's just a great spokesman for agriculture. Jamie McFadden, who, of course, is our environmental spokesman. Steve Cranston, who is our emissions spokesman. And we took along Owen Jennings, who is a wily old fox and there's not much Owen doesn't know. And he is very learned in the science of emissions for a man of his age. So it was great to have him. He really is fighting for New Zealand agriculture when he could easily be retired and have his feet up and not have a care in the world. So it's great to see him still going strong. So we did a presentation to the Environmental and Primary Producers Select Committee. And as I say, with 17 politicians there listening, that they come from all different parties. And we started the presentation. I presented on the practical things that farmers are doing, and I talked not too much because we had slides, on what was happening in the Pomahaka and how the water quality trends are all heading in the right direction, and that there's no silver bullets, that you just have to put in the work, and bit by bit things can get better. So I always thought it was a very degraded waterway. That's what we were told, but looking at all the figures that there are there, it wasn't that degraded at all, really.
When you're just on that, Bryce, when you New Zealanders are being browbeaten to believe that our water quality is terrible, but in a global sense, it's right up in the top 1 or 2% of the world. And yet, look, everyone knows there's things that aren't quite right in certain areas, generally around towns and their outflow. But this vilification of farming for the last 30 years or 20 years has been a bit outrageous, really. And of course, you know, good people like you have been part of catchment groups doing stuff that is exposing the truth. I've had a lot of data and come across my desk in time, and the state and trend of waterways has never been what the media has portrayed it to be and what our councils have told the media how it will be or is. So, look, good work. So you had some influence in there,
I hope. Yes, we did. Yeah, we certainly did, Don. We talked about that, and there's a few light bulb moments. I'll just cover off the water one first. The worry they have is that if there's no regulation, there'll be laggards, and that question was asked right at the finish, which I was really thrilled they did. So, of course, I was an integral part, and I had the hotline down here. So we have a best practice response team running out of our water care group, and we advertise our 0800 number, and we encourage anybody, whether they're farmers or general public, if they see something that they think is not right, it's damaging the environment, that they contact our hotline. Now, this happens quite a lot, or it used to. It's getting less and less, thank goodness. And it's monitored in Dunedin. So we get the call, and then it comes straight to me. This is all done anonymously. So it's somebody that is part of the group but not actively in the group so much, who takes the call. They ring me, tell me where the problem is. I normally get a hold of somebody else in our water care group, and away we go and pay a visit. And as I said to the select committees, that it works. It works so well because farmers are appreciative of it, because they know if somebody's called our hotline, the next number they're going to ring is going to be a regulatory hotline number, and they're going to end up in trouble. So we always get action. There's never an instance when we don't get action. And sometimes, in fact, I think there's only been one case where I've thought this person has actually intentionally been doing this. All the rest of them are because of something's happened in the family, something. They got called away, cows have broken out, or sheep have broken out. Normally there's a very logical reason why this has happened. So, the only thing we don't deal with is effluent. We put that straight on to the dairy companies.
Yeah, exactly. And like Don has often said, Bryce, that farmers are the only group that go naked in public. It seems like we are held in a public court, hung and quartered and drawn thanks to this media. Your spokesperson, Jamie McFadden, he has recently had what I would term a victory with getting Environment Canterbury to pull down a report that declared that massive amounts of the borders of the Braidar Rivers in the plains were being converted for agriculture use, whereas the reality was nothing had changed as per the new report that they got done from the 1990s. And this is what I mean, the wrongful and deliberate portrayal. How can someone make such a big mistake?
And not only that, Jaspreet, they backed it up because they had somebody else look at it and agree with the original findings. So they employed an independent to actually
Independent.
Do all the, yeah.
Independent my back. Foot. I wanted to say that. I don't know what I have learned as a dictionary definition of independent. When we say that so-and-so is independent, many a times you look around and the consultants employed have been sometimes working within the councils, or they've had links to, or they are previously paneled. So who's going to jeopardize their existing revenue stream? This has to be said. It is probably a worst kept secret here.
Yes. Yeah, you did right. Yeah, but you're right. They did. They won the battle, and they got all the money they had spent fighting it refunded to them
by Rum and Canterbury. Yep.
Yes.
So if that's not an admission of guilt, I don't know what is. You take the report off, and you pay the people, pay the farming groups there for the report they had got done. Sad, but this is so sad that we have to do this.
That is a big victory, if I can put it in. It's a big victory, but man, there is millions of dollars being wasted on lots of these sorts of attempts to infiltrate the farming bodies, really, or the farming profession, really, at great cost. And, you know, sadly, pushing them back is what Groundswell and what Federated Farmers and others are doing. It is vital that we expose them. And look, the win that Jamie and Groundswell have had in Canterbury is fantastic. I think it's the small end of the pie, or there's a massive amount out of others that need to be feeling the guilt as well, and keep the foot on their throat, Bryce.
Well, actually, there's probably even been a better one, and that was Jane Smith and sent pamphlets to everybody, all the farmers in the Waitaki catchment, Waitaki area, over their SNAs and SASMs, which are sites and areas significant to Maori. There's wetlands, landscapes, and heritages are other classifications. And she sent a pamphlet out to all the farmers, and they turned up en masse. And the Waitaki Council is just holding everything on them, just putting a stop to the whole lot. And they were ready to notify on all that. So that's been a major victory there as well.
So is it that the councils are still doing this work, even though they've been told by centre government not to? They're still continuing?
Yeah. That's happening everywhere, Jaspreet, because, you see, it's not law yet. That's what we talked to the politicians about while we were up there. It's due to go into its first reading, I think, in the next week or so. So they're not far away from having it lined up. But at this stage, that's why councils are pushing
but
on.
I would go as far as to call it a waste of public money here when you know it's going to be overturned. And each of those mapping is paying a consultant to the tune of at least $2,000. Let's be very, very conservative. And so this is a good waste of ratepayer money at the time when councils are having to tell their ratepayers that there is massive rate rises coming your way. How dare they?
Yeah, yes, this is exactly right. And you well know that the Environment Southland's in its land and water plan stage. Otago's nearly getting ready to notify theirs, their land and water plan. There's several other, although I see West Coast has just decided they're going to pull back and stop all work now. So there's a number of provinces and regional councils that are actually heavily involved in doing that, even though government has said to them, this is just a waste of ratepayers' money because you're going to have to rewrite all this when we do the Resource Management Act or we change the NPS on fresh water. So, you know, they've warned them all, they've written them letters, but you see they're claiming they're bound by the last government's laws that they put in place that they have to carry on with it. And legally they are right, but, I mean, it's still wasting ratepayers' money.
If there is something that anyone, you know, a bureaucrat, a council, and a minister wants to drag their feet on, they find an excuse to drag their feet. Yet here, they are not finding an excuse. They're finding a way to hit the accelerator here. So I don't buy that quite. It is being done very deliberately.
I'm sure you know where it comes from, Jaspreet. It may not necessarily be councillors in all instances. Sometimes it can be the people behind the councillors that have their own little agendas running. Mm-hmm. And the councillors, even though they get to vote on it, they can be very much swayed, as I'm sure you've come across. And I'm sure that is happening in some instances.
So just I might butt in there and say and ask a question. You probably knew who was advising the previous government ministries in the sort of same spaces that you've been working with in Wellington. Did you notice any of the same personalities advising the ministries still, or have they been taken out and banished out of Siberia?
good question, Don. And I can tell you a great surprise to us that we found that most of those people are still very much entrenched. And apparently we were told that they have changed their attitudes and are quite happy to work under this new government and install what they want installed. But for us, it was a major surprise. We couldn't believe that they walk in, all the staff stay, and away they go. They just carry on. So I imagine that everybody would get the sack and have to reapply for their jobs once the government changed how wrong I am.
Well, years gone by, I fell into the same hole. I believed the same thing. But leopards don't change spots, I recall. And, you know, they wait for the next change of government so that they can continue their, you know, they'll still be in the background with their own agendas. That, you know, it's, people may not have sort of big agendas in their brain, but everybody does have. And something's niggling away that we need to take something this way. And that just won't go away from those officials. It just won't go away. And they know that, you know, whether it's 3, 6, or 9 years, they will have their day back again where they can have another go. That's the problem here. So you're right. I just am a bit surprised that, you know, I noticed Simon Watt, it was Jaspreet that brought this up to me, Climate Minister Simon Watt has the same advisor that James Shaw had, senior
senior private, so, yeah. So
how does that work?
I don't know. This is so surreal that this can. How can a person who was in the radical ideology of the last government, which very honestly hasn't changed all that much in with this one, is that should we actually be thinking that they're all on the same way of thinking when you're not changing your private secretaries? I would if I had a completely different agenda from my predecessor. The first thing would be to get rid of the dead wood there, because it would be, I would have thought it would be too hard for them. We've done it as in work, in business, like we've moved farms, come to a new farm, which was, you know, some things were not going well. That's why we were offered that job. And sooner or later, either the staff left by themselves or we had to ask them to leave because things get uncomfortable. They get used to doing things in a certain way. So just carrying that same thing from a professional life, why should this be any different?
Yeah, look, it's probably something worth digging into, isn't it? Because it makes you wonder how they could just change direction so quickly. If the government's going to change direction as much as it campaigned on it was going to do, how do they take the staff to change direction that quickly as well? Because they've implemented all the past stuff.
It happens at local councils too, Jaspreet. I'm being a bit tough on just central government, aren't I? I mean, we've got to bring it to all agencies of government, including the NGOs. They just don't. There's no clean slate here. There's no clean slate. That's the problem. So, Bryce, we'll go full circle for a minute. You were in the meeting with 17. What happened after that? Then we'll go and do a roundup on the SNAs and the methane stuff as well.
Okay, well, everybody presented, Jamie presented on the significant natural areas and other features. And that was a light bulb moment for several in that on that committee or on those committees. Some of them had absolutely no idea that massive swaths of land were actually being classified. And if somebody on a particular day decided that that shouldn't be farmed, they had the right to actually stop farming on that and have it taken out of that farmland. And to the point where I think there's 72% of the Waitaki area had classifications over it, which really some of them were stunned by that there could be that much area that could possibly be taken out of farming at the whim of some councillor or somebody who thought it deemed not fit for farming. So that was a real light bulb moment. Then Steve Cranson presented on emissions and talked a little bit about why are we not letting world markets dictate our emissions. In other words, if they can find other countries that have less emissions, buy their product. If they can't, then buy ours and pay a premium for it if they want something on top of that.
Yeah.
So that's the way we've basically gone. Owen Jennings gave a very, very good slide display on the insignificance of methane in our atmosphere. And some of the figures, as you well know, just would blow you away. How honestly people think it can actually be doing all the damage, we'll never know.
Well, have to take issue with you, Bryce. We're better. We know it's an absolute fallacious story that's been peddled for 30 years. And the people that have written papers before, they're not political. They don't want to play politics with their papers, but the politics have played with their papers and decided the outcomes for us. And of course, the New Zealand media would be as bad as anywhere in the world that's picked it up and said, we'll run with this. Let's demonize farming as much as we can. This horrible, naughty gas called methane that they burp is creating so much warming. Well, as Owen will have exposed, it's close to zero, the warming effect of methane, let alone nitrous oxide. So it, you know,
four millionths of a degree, Don, I take exception to that. It's four millionths of a degree.
I'm sure you can feel it myself. 4 minutes of a degree is going to make quite a difference to us, isn't it? Yeah, the tossers that are peddling this nonsense annoy me a lot, as you can tell. And of course, we're going to expose in our shows ahead the nonsense of Agri Zero and this chasing rainbows about methane vaccines and methane boluses and stuff, and the grifters that are at the coalface of that. We've just got to, and I know that you can't play that politic when you're in Wellington trying to make an influence, but we can play it on this show.
We can. And I can tell you one thing of the last 4 years. I have had enough of vaccines to last me a lifetime. Animal or bovine, that is it. Done it.
Anyway, look, sorry for the rant. Oh, we took you off your scent again.
I opened myself up to be taken on over there.
Yeah, you don't do that. Look, you're very wily, Bryce. You hardly ever do that, but I couldn't miss that gap.
Yeah.
Quite right. Yeah, so that we had a question and answer session at the finish. We were fortunate we got a whole hour with the select committee. So, there were certainly some good things come out of it, without a doubt. Some eye-opening moments. The Green Party, interestingly enough, talked to two of them after, and they said, you know, we're a lot closer together than most people realise, aren't we? And I said, well, we are, because most people think that farmers are out to destroy the environment, but goodness gracious me, that's our livelihood. There's no way we want to destroy it. We're actually very, very caring about the environment, because we want to be able to pass our land on to the next generation, so we want to leave it in a good state. I heard James Shaw say the same thing to us. He said, oh, we agree on so many things. Well, of course we do. Well, when they stick to the environment and don't go off on social issues, of course we agree.
Well, you know, I worry. I've got in my brain, Bryce, Greeks and gifts. All this just doesn't sit well with me. When you hear a politician of the Green ilk say this stuff, they've been told this stuff since they began in their regime, the Green Party's form. They've never wanted to listen to any of this stuff. So I'm wary as when you say that, but, you know, You're a schmoozer from way back, so look, you might bring them over. Good work. Did they take you to Bellamy's for lunch? That's what I want to know. That's a vital news. That's a mainstream media type question. Did they take you to Bellamy's?
No, we didn't even see where Bellamy's was. In fact, we had to get our own lunch. And I'll tell you what, it was interesting because I had a bit of cash on me that we had some donations. There were six of us. So I said, oh, come on, we'll go and we'll get lunch. So we went to this place and I said, you ones go first and I'll pay at the finish. So they all went in. I rocked up at the finish and I pulled out my wad of cash and, oh, sorry, we don't take cash. And I said, well, you're lucky I'm the last one here, because if I'd been first, we would have walked out, because I said, it's legal tender.
Wow. Yeah,
I just couldn't believe it. No cash, cashless cafe.
That's Wellington for you.
And they probably wanted to add a little surcharge for the credit card use, the pay wave or whatever. And you would have given a tip.
You know, and it's probably getting off subject just a little bit, but it's still really important. But it's probably because young ones actually have no idea how to do math anymore, Don. And, you know, you know often you can give over some money. In another instance, this woman couldn't get me $10 change. She didn't have a $10 note anywhere. But she had 20. So I said, oh, well, here, I'll give you another 10. And you just give me $40, $42 back instead of 32. And she didn't know. Look, she was absolutely bamboozled. She couldn't understand. I was getting more money. I was underpaying. And I said, no, because I'm going to give you a 10 and you give me a 20 back instead of trying to find a 10.
Southland honesty is too much for some people, I know. we've been trying for years. Hey, we'll get back on track. So the upshot of all this, did you have more meetings? But sorry, I don't want to interrupt. Did you have one more meeting after that?
No, we had several meetings. The next meeting was with the Minister of Agriculture, Todd McClay, and the Minister for the Environment, Penny Simmons. And we met with them jointly. And I'd have to say we had a really good meeting with them. It made us aware that people, even the politicians, didn't know there was other classifications other than significant natural areas. They didn't realise that they were there. I don't think they actually knew how they got there. But we all know it's Section 6 of the Resource Management Act is how they got there. So we focused on that with these other politicians. I'd have to say the Minister for the Environment, Minister Simmons, has followed up. She has followed up. And I even got a message from her yesterday. We talked about gravel and rivers, Jaspreet. You'll be happy to know. She was at a mayoral, she was at a mayoral forum in Southland yesterday where they discussed it. She thinks there's going to be some changes made. So it'd be interesting for you to watch what happens there. So we discussed a wide range of things, including the methane issue with Minister McClay, who was going to be on this independent panel. We encouraged him that we would like some overseas scientists on that have a differing view, because if it's not, then we actually put it quite plainly, if they do not have somebody that's going to push the boundaries, then it's just a tick box exercise. Nothing will happen. So he said, well, they have to be reputable. And we asked him, who decides who is reputable? Is it somebody that disagrees with the present science? Does that make them not reputable? So it's going to be a battle, but we have worked with New Zealand First Act and National, we're pushing them all to make sure that there's somebody on that panel that's not going to be a yes man, that's going to question the science. So whether we get there or not, I don't know. It's pretty closed circuit, as you could well imagine, once you're getting into emissions.
Well, you know, the coalition has got the mandate effectively to sort this out. Finally, after 20-odd years, we've got the mandate to fix this, you would have thought. And so more pity or more fool them if they do not take this opportunity to sort it once and for all. Because the New Zealand farming landscape, you know, and methane alone and nitrous oxide is in a tenuous position at the moment. You know, everyone's had their pound of flesh out of the kilogram of milk, the kilogram of milk solids, the lamb, the wool. Everyone's had their pound of flesh. And the carcass called New Zealand farming hasn't got much left to give. And we shouldn't have to give any more. And the regulator needs to realize that they have been skinning us alive. Most of it isn't international market driven. The cost structures that we've applied internally are what is killing us. And if the coalition can't fix this, who can? Yeah, they have to do it. They have to do it.
You're right. They do have to do it, Don. And the other thing we did broach with them all was the upcoming banking inquiry. We certainly put the plight of everyday farmers and what they're going through with the low prices, especially sheep and beef farmers. And we tried to get them to understand that this needs to be done simply because there are some user unfriendly interest rates being charged, and it's costing the country, well, quite frankly, billions. Right. It's over $1 billion, I think, the last working out on the difference in interest rates. And it's just when people are struggling so much, it's ridiculous.
Well, and I remember about 2008, the Reserve Bank governor spoke to me and said, Don, you're going to have to talk jawbone, as he called it, the interest rates down, and each 1% in those days was $44 million, I think it was. I think we had 400. No, it was 44 billion of debt. So no, sorry, 4 billion, in fact. So okay. 440 million. No, 440. Sorry, I got that way wrong. And so we did that, and most farmers wouldn't have realized that it was effectively the Reserve Bank governor who told farm leaders at the time, me included, to go out and jawbone interest rates down. And we think we did make quite a difference. So look, all power to your arm if you've got the ear of these guys, because it's vital that, you know, my view is this: if you go to Wellington regularly enough as an entity like I did, even just on my own, they think you're in a suit. You don't represent real farmers. You really, they were misguided, because we're all real farmers. You guys are in groundswell and fed farmers. You really do represent the grassroots. And sadly, some politicians had a feeling that, no, this guy's in a suit. He doesn't represent the grassroots. So all power to your arm again, Bryce. I think you're doing a fantastic job. So after that, what happened then? Because you've actually even had some more meetings.
Yeah, that's right. We went on and we met with Mark Patterson, of course, is Associate Minister of Agriculture. Spent time with him. It was a good opportunity for the sheep and beef farmers to talk about wool and that sort of thing. Didn't interest me quite so much, but still equally as important that topic was discussed. Once again, going back onto the tree issue, the demise of sheep and beef farmland to trees, we had great discussion, because it's a gnarly one. How that's going to be sorted, Don. We've come up with some ideas which we've sent back to the minister that we think if the going to be so insistent on carrying on with carbon credits, well, let's keep them in New Zealand. So in other words, if a company's going to buy carbon credits, they stay in New Zealand. So that's their investment, but there's nothing leaves over shore. So protect your company outside New Zealand with carbon credits bought in New Zealand. You can do that and offset against a company in New Zealand if you want to. That's fine. So, we got some ideas. It's your early days. We've got to work through some more of them yet, but there should be changes, as simple as that. So that was mostly focused on sheep and beef. Then we went and met with Minister Hoggard and Mark Cameron. No, he's not a minister, MP Mark Cameron. And we had a great meeting with them. Same sort of thing. Talking about Andrew Hoggard is, of course, the Minister for Significant Natural Areas. He's in charge of that.
Okay.
So we got into some depth on that, and he really nailed him on these other features, because they are going to probably have more of an influence on farming than, in fact, SNAs are. Especially the sites and areas significant to Māori, which is going to affect a lot of people. So if you don't know, the whole of the Gore district has been classified as a site and area significant to Māori.
Yeah.
So at some stage, if you want to do anything, you may have to get permission to do it.
For everything,
On everything. So
that basically, Bryce, comes out to private property rights, doesn't it? Whatever happened there? I saw that particular wording on the Gore District Council's website, which said that it was, I'm paraphrasing it, ludicrous to ask Māori what is significant to them, because that's sort of, in a way, saying that your mana is only restricted to these areas, so we're going to declare the whole district. And I was like, how can you do that to your ratepayers? There are people who bought properties there in good faith, and you're suddenly telling them that, you know, there's restrictions coming your way, and we don't know what.
Well, look, we've approached them on it, and apparently they said it was an oversight that it got through, and I'm sitting there thinking, yes, you're right. I just about did the same thing, Jasper. I thought, we pay all these people to be counsellors. They sit there and listen to everything that's being said. How can something like that get through as an oversight?
Get slipped through, yeah. It's printed on their website. There's sections of the district plan that I can look up there.
Yeah.
And it's a mistake.
So, there's going to be some meetings on that, I'm sure. but hopefully we can nip it in the bud. And I think, as I said earlier on, we were surprised to find out that most of the politicians didn't actually understand it, including the Minister for the Environment, and we've had to back up with a lot of information on this sort of stuff for them to understand what has actually happened.
And that's sad. They have their own staffers. And these are not issues that are very obscure. These are issues that have been frontline, newspapers, social media, everywhere. You would have thought that they would have gotten, a briefing. Dawn is probably better explaining this than me. But some paperwork that puts it in forefront of their minds that this is what's happening. For those ministers, for them to need you to go up to Wellington and then say, oh, thank you for enlightening us. That's a joke beyond. We have overpaid, overstaffed ministries with bureaucrats earning, mind-boggling figures. And this is what we get.
You might recall, Jaspreet, when they sent out the papers to people on the West Coast, and they actually did, they got papers saying that their land was a site near a significant Māori, and they sent it straight to us, and we went on social media and put out emails talking about the land grab on the West Coast. Yes, we got accused of being fear-mongering and all the rest of it. It actually happened. Now, why did they not pick up on that then? That's what we can't understand. Exactly. That was a big media thing. Mainstream media got involved. That Groundswell was spreading malicious rumours about land grabs. It wasn't, because these people all had their notices. So, defies logic.
Interesting, just going way back to 91, the RMA being enacted, I never, ever heard anything other than SNAs until about till SASMs came along in about 2018, 2019, or even more recently. Never did any advisor ever tell me that there was anything other than the significant natural area component of, as you say, Section 6. So, I've never read the RMA. You pay people to read that. You pay people to advise you. You pay people to make sure that they represent the farm, in our sense, the farmers and the property right. And clearly, that was one of my big things, that the RMA does not recognise property rights nearly well enough. Well, clearly it did. It recognises the rights of Māori over others, and that is not right.
Well, also, Don, there's the landscapes and heritage one, which is two other classifications. I mean, they said that the landscapes, and apparently this is what happened. It was questioned when it first came out, but it was explained as, well, look, that's the likes of Mount Cook and Lake Taupo and, the Hooker Falls and all this. That's what we're talking about. But the trouble was, somebody else went for a drive one day and decided, oh, that's quite interesting. We might get that listed. And then it just went on and on and on. Hello. And they're everywhere now. So that somebody considers that they're essential landscapes. So, and same with heritage, like buildings something that may be unique, an old dairy factory, that's part of heritage.
But the premise then, it is when they classify stuff this way, it is that the government will be better stewards of your land than the person who's actually owned it, maintained it to such a level that today someone can drive past and say, hey, that's amazing. But let's take it off the ones who have maintained it at that level. And this is where we are.
Right.
But, as James Shaw said, and I seem to remember this was on a radio show right in the middle of the COVID era when he accused you guys. What did he say? He says Groundswell is just a group of Pākehā farmers from down south who've always pushed back against the idea of any kind of regulation. I will never forget that one. This he got from a minister, You are just white farmers who are anti-everything, Bryce. So the reception was better this time in Wellington then.
look, Jasper, you've hit the nail on the head 100%. The only reason they can get the SNAs now is because most of the people that have them cared for them, and that's why they're there. They were never going to get rid of them. They were looking after them, and all of a sudden they find you've got to fence it off and you've got to do this and you've got to do that. And they're saying, but I've looked after them all this time. What about my neighbour who demolished everything? He hasn't got any. He's not getting penalised. Mm. As simple as that, isn't it?
Exactly.
Yeah. It was overreach, that's for sure. So we've taken a lot of your time. What else did you do? And we probably could have done two programs, as it's turned out. What else did you do in Wellington before you headed for home and into the wet weather of Southland? It's been miserable down there, aren't they?
It has, Donnie. And it's not easy going right now. In fact, we're getting closer to drawing the cows off every day because we've had a wonderful season. It's been a great season for farming, dairy cows, I should say. Not so good if you're farming sheep. We after that, the meeting with Minister Hoggard and Member of Parliament Mark Cameron, that was the end of our official duties for the day. It was a big day, though. And we've done a lot of following up since. So you always know whether, I guess, you've hit a nerve or two or people have listened, as if they come back to you and say, I want some clarification on this. Have you got more information on that? And that definitely did happen in a number of areas. So that's been encouraging.
Mm. And so perhaps the last thing to wrap up is, your involvement around the country on the long-term planning with councils and these crazy rate rises that are being mooted. How are you working that through? Are you encouraging individuals to put in their pennies worth? As much as I don't like calling them submissions, we'll call them their pennies worth.
Yeah, yes, Don, we are. What we've found is people want us to start a townswell. We've had a number of people write to us and say, you start a groundswell, why don't you start townswell? And it's somewhere, even though it really concerns us, we've probably sat in the background of this a little bit and put people together, and we're linking them up right throughout New Zealand because we've had a number of people contact us. So we're able to, say, well, so-and-so is doing that area, so-and-so is doing that area, and try and just link them all together. As you know, there's lots of public meetings being held, and there will be more. I don't know if you're aware, our local Clutha District Council, there is a movement afoot now to actually take them on legally. I've decided I'll help, as in I'll pay my dues to get that underway as well. I think that somewhere along the line there's got to be a challenge, and there's some very conservative, deep-thinking people that have probably never been in the public eye before that are starting to put their hands up. And you know when that happens, there's genuine movement at foot. So I would say these councils better beware. They better watch that they're not going to ramroad people over this. This is a hard times, and they need to all look at their what they're doing, and they need to be aware that they've got to cut the cloth like everybody else to survive. So I watch this space, Don. I think it's going to get quite interesting as time goes on.
Yeah, well, look, I hope so. I mean, I cut my teeth in local government issues, and you get it ebbs and flows, and you think you've had some wins, but the machine has just gathered momentum, especially over the last 20 years. And good that you people are on the pulse as well, or on their case.
I sneak in one last question here, Bryce? I know we should let you go. The Rural Advocacy Hub. Are you now, I saw a post recently about Groundswell being involved in that. Are you seeing a lot more strife out there? Are you, what's the plan there?
Yes, look, we weren't even going to go to field days, but Federated Farmers asked us to be part of the Rural Hub. We thought that was a great place where we and it's going to be, the politicians are going to be at the hub. So we thought, okay, well, it's a great place to actually talk to people. And we're happy to stand beside Federated Farmers. We're happy to stand beside anybody who says they're advocating for agriculture. There's no way we wouldn't stand with them. Doesn't mean we agree with them or agree with everything they do. And I'm sure they're the same with us. But I think it's important that agriculture stands together. If it doesn't, then we're just going to be as divided in the future as we have been in the recent past. So that's why we're only too happy to be there, Jasper.
Fantastic. And yeah, that's probably a good place to end, and we'll get an update from you perhaps after the field days in June. I thank you, Bryce. Thanks for coming back on Reality Check Radio and giving us the rural checkup. Really, it's been fantastic. And twice as long as we expected to take with you, but you know, we get sincerity, we get it as it needs to be said, and that's the key for us. We just want people that speak the truth and no obfuscation, straight down the line. That's the key. And so thanks for coming back on RCR, and we'll get you back soon. Thank you.
Thank you, Don, and thank you, Jaspreet. Keep up the great work, you two. Great to see you back on air again. Excellent.
Thanks, Bryce. Bye-bye.
Bye.
With your help, we can continue to fight for freedom. This is not possible without your generosity. Join our quest for the truth and our freedom. Simply visit www.realitycheck.radio/donate to make a difference today.